You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Mershell give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
We're back. Welcome back to the College Gridiron 365 podcast. I'm Brant Parsons with Matt Mershell. Back after a hurricane. Yes. If you will. That's my favorite word because it's certainly, for my kids, was a hurricane. We haven't done a podcast in a while, Matt, because of Hurricane Irma. There haven't been football games in the state, too many of them, because of Hurricane Irma. And before we get, this is technically a preview podcast for week four, but before we get to week four, I wanted to talk about some of the things we missed by not doing a podcast. And first, everything well with you since the storm?
Yeah, actually, does it not seem like I was at Miami Hurricanes football practice here in Orlando, and it's weird. It's just you still don't feel like you're back in the, you know, even though football's gone on, you feel like it's almost like a reboot of the season, and everything just seems very still out of place until we actually get to this Saturday when we can play most of these games and these teams will get back on the football field for the first time and. What, like 3 weeks in most cases?
Yeah, 21 days for some. I'm looking forward to hopefully watching the games in AC this weekend. I still have air conditioning at the homestead. The big game that we, in week two, that we haven't had a chance to talk about, and I think we need to touch upon it because of the national implications of it. Oklahoma beat down Ohio State, dominated them in all facets of the game. Your first thoughts on it and how you see it going forward?
Well, I mean, if we're just looking at the big picture of things, which I think a lot of these are, is you know, I look at the fact that it was a statement win for Lincoln Riley, and it was a statement win for Oklahoma as a football program. You know, I mean, last year they went into that game and Ohio State really dominated them, embarrassed them, if you want to, so to speak, and then all of a sudden Oklahoma put together that long win streak. You know, this time around, I think, you know, Baker Mayfield came into this game with a sort of a chip on his shoulder. We saw that from his play. Was able to really kind of extend a lot of things. I thought defensively they confused Ohio State quarterback JT Barrett, threw a lot of zone reads at, threw a lot of zone defenses at him with, I think he struggled with, was we saw. And, you know, this is big for the Big 12. Big 12 needed a win like this. They needed to continue to have a team, you know, showcase itself to make a big push for the college football playoff.
I have two concerns from the game. One, obviously, for Ohio State, there's a concern with the offense. And this is a team that is supposedly loaded on both sides. And we saw the same thing that kind of affected this team against Clemson last year, against Michigan at the end of the year, against Penn State, an offense that when they are against a talented defense has trouble moving the ball. They were not able to get the ball downfield. We know that Ohio State doesn't have the deep threats maybe that JT Barrett needs. Maybe JT Barrett has just regressed to the point where he's not going to be able to take that next step. It would be interesting to watch Ohio State over the next couple weeks. My concern with Oklahoma is this. Ohio State won last year in Oklahoma, and apparently Oklahoma was teed off that Ohio State sang the fight song or the alma mater after the game. Oklahoma put a lot in this game, and you could see it in the way they reacted to the win. This was their Super Bowl. This was their championship. It was everything they probably worked on from that loss last year was to get back into Columbus and win this game, and they did, and they looked great. It's a long season. And I just wonder if there was maybe too much expended out there. We'll see how the Oklahoma has a favorable schedule over the next couple of games. They do have TCU lurking. They still have Oklahoma State lurking. West Virginia with Will Grier is going to be a team that's lurking. But I'm curious to see, they'll have Texas, how this Oklahoma team goes the rest of the season, hoping they didn't expend too much emotional energy on this game because this was everything to them. You could see it by the way they reacted after the game, the way Baker Mayfield reacted, the way the fans, the players did. They wanted this game as much as any game they've probably ever wanted, and they got it, and they look like a great team. Just it's early in the year. Just kind of see how they react down the road and hope that they didn't peak at this too early in the season for them.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't concern me as much. I mean, I think, listen, the Big 12 has a championship game this year, starting this year. So as long as they finish within the top two spots, they're going to have an opportunity to be in that playoff. I do think, to me, you know, Mayfield has put together probably one of the best starts we've seen, you know, a quarterback to have so far. And look, he's trying to join an elite group of quarterbacks in history. I think I was looking the other day that, you know, there's five or six players finished in the top five of Heisman voting 3 years during their career. Tim Tebow, Herschel Walker, Archie Griffith, Glenn Davis of Army. He's looking to join that list. He's been in the top five the last two seasons of the Heisman voting. If he keeps playing the way he's playing early on, this is a guy who's going to be right there as well. So I think this is something that definitely is going to stay forward and to look forward to.
And I came into the office today, and you and I walk into the office, and we get nothing done because everybody wants to talk college football with us. It's just reality. But I sat down, and I said, my number one team in the country right now is Clemson. And we have not talked about their last two games where they dominated Auburn and then went into Louisville with a freshman quarterback, any question marks they had any position, and they dominated Louisville too. And they did it with their defense. They did it with their offense. They are coming into form. I think they look better now maybe than they did at this point last season. But you watch that Clemson defense, and you could really see it against Auburn. They are so fast that even if they aren't in the right spot, they get to the right spot. And they get there quickly, and they're able to make up for mistakes by chasing guys down. And I look at Clemson's schedule, and this was the heart of it. Yeah, they still have Florida State and Florida State's defense, but we don't know what's going to happen with Florida State with their quarterback situation and their offense. But Clemson looks so good so far into the season. Yeah. And almost on cue, the Clemson guy walks into the outside the studio, just almost like to remind us that we work with. But Clemson, to me, they've had the best start to the year.
Yeah, they're the best team as of this point.
As of right now.
Going into week four, they are the best team. They've played the best in all phases of football. To me, they're the best defensive line in college football right now. I mean, you saw that the past two games, what they did, 11 sacks against Jarrett Stidham of Auburn, 4 against, you know, Lamar Jackson. But again, remember, Lamar Jackson's a lot more mobile and runs a lot more of read option and can get out of the pocket a lot quicker than Stidham was. This team is playing really well. And I think, to me, this goes back to what people have been talking about for a while now, is Dabo Sweeney, the Clemson coach, is all of a sudden kind of using the same blueprint that Nick Saban is using in Alabama. How you were able to get your team back from losing tremendous amount of talent and basically being almost better than you were last year. They are better offensively than they were this time last year. They're better defensively than they were this time last year. So to me, this team is playing really good. Now, can they continue that? They got a big game against Florida State coming up. You know, they got a schedule, like you mentioned. They're going to have some challenges here and there. Remember last year they got derailed. There's a couple games they had some
they lost the Pitt, and they had trouble with NC State.
Yeah, so to me, I think that's going to be the challenge. You've got a young quarterback. But to me, right now, going into week four, this is the best team in college football.
A team that is still ranked at the top. I have them in the playoff. They've looked good and they've played big games. And it's USC. They have a win over Stanford, which maybe loses a little bit of luster after Stanford loses to San Diego State. And then they have the double OT win against Texas. Maybe a tougher game than people expected. I think people, and you talk about overreaction theater that we talked about after week one, I think maybe people overreacted to where Texas was after the Maryland game. But Texas gave USC everything they could handle. But the Trojans won. And Sam Darnold looks good when he throws the ball. And the pieces are there. USC has two statement wins. They've got a long road to hoe still being in the Pac-12, but they certainly have jumped their early hurdles also.
They have, but, you know, my concern is Darnold. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, the guy's thrown 6 picks this season. He's had a couple of those have been tips, receivers not making, you know, reaching out and trying to make the play, tipping the ball up and guys hitting it. But still, he's had 14 interceptions in the last 13 starts. So he's a guy that's turned the ball over a lot as of late. But he's a gunslinger. He's very much like a Baker Mayfield with Oklahoma. He's a guy that's going to throw the ball. He made some throws. We talked about this before the podcast in that Texas game that were just unbelievable laser-like strikes, you know, to guys in the end zone, throws that had to be made the way he threw them. So to me, that's something that I think you can kind of live with a little bit. I think defensively they've got a little bit of an issue, you know, that they got burned, obviously, by Texas and some of the issues when it came to you know, the secondary being tired in the end of that game. But yeah, USC's right there. But let's not, you know, the Pac-12, as you mentioned, they got past Stanford, but, you know, there's always going to be UCLA is going to be in the mix. You know, you've got Utah. You know, Washington's going to be down the road at some point maybe as well, Washington State. So the Pac-12 is loaded up. So for me, this team's got to play a little bit better than they have if they want to come out of the Pac-12 being as a team that can compete for the college football playoff.
The Pac-12 is a great segue. Sent out some notes, which conferences do. There are 27 FBS teams that are perfect at 3-0 on the season. Seven of them are in the Pac-12. And this isn't even counting. UCLA has a loss to Memphis. Stanford has a loss to San Diego State. Arizona State has a loss to San Diego State. But you still have seven teams there. California, off to their best start in two seasons. Colorado, best start in, I'm doing the math on the run, on the fly here, nine seasons. Oregon, best start in three seasons. USC's their best start in six seasons. Utah, they've won three of their first games the last 3 years. Washington has won four games of three of their last four seasons. Washington State, off to their best start in 12 years. I mean, they're going to be tested throughout the season, as you said, and they're getting even the teams that aren't 3-0. But it was interesting. You segged into the Pac-12 stats. Yeah. I love the good numbers, but the Pac-12 starting off the season, they had the second best win percentage in the country to the SEC out of the Power Five conferences. It's not going to be an easy road for USC, and if they continue to turn the ball over the way they do, eventually it might bite them. It almost bit them with Texas.
Yes.
It could bite them at some point along the way.
Yeah, and that's like I said, that's my concern. And I still believe if you look at the Pac-12, they're not even the first, second, maybe even third best conference right now. I mean, I think you look at the ACC, you look at the Big Ten, some to speak, I think they're right there. Maybe they're third when you get down to it. But the SEC, I mean, outside of Alabama, who else is left in the SEC that's playing?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about, because we now move on to week four, and the SEC East certainly has gotten interesting over the 2 weeks we've been away. Georgia with the win at Notre Dame, Florida with their whatever you want to call win over Tennessee, which was a bad...
Don't call it a Hail Mary. It's not a Hail Mary.
It was a designed pass play. It was a terrible game, but a big win for Florida. But two teams with some statement wins are playing this weekend, and that's Mississippi State at Georgia. Mississippi State demolished LSU last week. I got a little bit of ribbing on Twitter from a Mississippi State fan because I don't have the Bulldogs high enough on my bowl projection chart yet, because I'm not quite ready to jump completely in bed with them after that win. Georgia comes into this game now ranked number 11 in the country. They got the win over Notre Dame. They certainly seem like the best team in the East going forward, because what we've seen from Florida and Tennessee hasn't impressed us yet. Of course, Vanderbilt maybe is a team in the East. But Mississippi State visits Georgia. The first time these schools have ever met where they're both ranked in the top 25. They don't play every year, but I still thought that was an interesting stat. Last time they played, though, was 6 years ago, and Georgia won that game at home. I think this is going to be a game that will tell us a lot about that second tier of the SEC and who is in it. If Georgia is a legit contender, not just in the East, but as a potential, folly for Alabama in the SEC title game, and Mississippi State a chance to see just how real they are after they beat LSU just handily on Saturday, 37-7.
Yeah, this is going to be a defensive battle. I mean, Todd Grantham, former Georgia defensive coordinator, now with Mississippi State. Mississippi State putting together one of the best defenses in the SEC right now. One of the best defenses against the run, that's for sure. I think this is going to come down to, which team can do a better job of stopping the run, which team can do a better job of containing the quarterbacks. Nick Fitzgerald, the Mississippi State quarterback, one of the most dynamic quarterbacks you're probably not even hearing about. I mean, he's a guy that's really putting up big numbers, but doesn't get the kind of attention that maybe a Lamar Jackson gets in another conference. So to me, that's a key for as well, as they contain him. And to me, this is a big game. Don't get me wrong. I think this will do a lot to identify some of that. I still think we're 2 or 3 weeks away before some of this SEC second tier teams really kind of start to work each other out and see what we get, because there's a lot of bad football being played. There's a lot of good football, but there's a lot of bad football in some of these teams right now.
Talk about teams playing good football, one team playing great football. Number 16 TCU visits number 6 Oklahoma State. The Cowboys, the third best offense in the country, 607 yards per game, fourth in scoring offense, 54 per game, and they've played three times. So it's not like UCF has the number one offense or something like that. They have one game. Maryland has played two games. They're like number two. And Oklahoma State did this against Pitt. Not necessarily a top Power 5 team, but a Power 5 team blew them away last week. Their offense looks as potent as any offense out there. TCU was always known for defense. They are solid league coming together, putting together a team that certainly can compete. But when you look at Oklahoma State, you look at Mason Rudolph, you look at this offense, you think Red River rivalry. You're already looking and thinking this could be the team that they could get two shots at Oklahoma. This could be a team that follows Oklahoma. But they're going to get tested this week with TCU. And I think our first chance to see, I thought we might see a little bit of it against Pitt, but Pitt really did not put up a fight. Just see how good this offense is, because right now it is as dynamic as they come in college football.
Yeah, this is a good challenge, because TCU, which is normally known for being a high-scoring team, they have the top defense in the Big 12 right now, and I think that's going to give a big challenge. Like, I mean, Oklahoma State right now is playing really good offensive football. I mean, they put up a lot of points. Mason Rudolph, as you mentioned, I think they've got, they returned, the only school that returned 4,000-yard pass or 1,000-yard rush or 1,000-yard, receiver. So they've got all the
they
pieces
there.
They look
so good on offense
against
Pitt.
They look so good. Now, if TCU can slow them down a little bit, we'll see what happens. But I agree with you. I think when it gets said and done, I think you're looking at Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, probably the top two teams in this conference moving forward, maybe even going into that title game, which would be a Bedlam 2, I guess, if they get to that point. So I really want to see if they can make that, if they are legit. If they blow out TCU, if this game is more one-sided than people thought, I think that would be a huge statement for them. And a team that really could find themselves in the top five very quickly.
And before I get the emails, I realize I got the rivalry wrong. The Red River rivalry is Oklahoma,
oh,
Texas,
yeah, Oklahoma,
and this
Texas.
Is Bedlam.
Sorry.
So I got that one wrong. You got it right. You got yes. Bedlam. I was wrong on that. Another game this weekend of interest, there's not a lot. But number 7 Washington visits Colorado, a rematch of the Pac-12 championship game last year. Colorado playing better than I think we expected, because they had lost so many guys from last year's team. This was a team that had come out of nowhere with a lot of veterans last year and had played really well, made the Pac-12 championship game. We knew what we were getting from Washington, and we are still knowing what we are getting from Washington is a dynamic offense, speed at the skill positions. They won this game 41-10 last year. This time they got to go to Boulder on the road, the Huskies do. I think Washington wins this game if I was to be a betting man, but I'm curious as if it comes as easy as it did last year, because they kind of got the snowball going downhill early in that game and just rolled over the Buffaloes. But I think Colorado's better than we thought this year. They didn't return as much as we thought, but the guys there are playing well. But I'm curious to see how Washington reacts going on the road in this one. A late game, night game in Boulder, it's going to be a great crowd. This is a statement game, if you will, for Washington, to me, to see just how legit they are in this national discussion.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to a point. I mean, I think Colorado's not as good as they were last year. I think that losing a guy like Jim Leavitt, their defensive coordinator, to Oregon really hurts them a little bit. I think they have got some talent there as well, but I feel like Washington's got the pieces. They're a team right now that no one is really talking about. When you think about a top 10 program, you're not talking about Jake Browning, you're not talking about Miles Gaskin, you're not talking about these offensive players that Washington has. But I think that's good in a way if you're Chris Peterson's team, because you want to be kind of under the radar and you want to see what happens, because there was a lot being made about the Huskies last year, and we saw kind of where that ended up with Alabama in the playoff semifinal. So to me, I think this is a Washington team right now that wants to kind of play under the radar, should get a good win against Colorado, and really kind of keep moving forward as it comes to their reassertion back to being the Pac-12 favorite.
Another game I want to talk about in a state team, Florida State. 21 days off since they played Alabama in Atlanta. Number 12, Florida State hosts NC State. They had one of their easy games, if you will. ULM canceled. Miami game that was supposed to be last weekend was moved to October, so it became their bye week. They're 7-0 in home openers under Jimbo, but they've never had an ACC team as a home opener under Jimbo. And all the talk is being made about Florida State at quarterback and James Blackman. He'll be the first true freshman to start a game for Florida State since 1985. Chip Ferguson, the last quarterback as a true freshman to start a game for Florida State. And that was like later in the season. It wasn't this early on. Florida State defense looked so good against Alabama, and they were put in so many bad situations. Like, I forget the number, how many times Alabama started at the 45-yard line or closer in Florida State territory. But still, they held them to 173 yards rushing, 96 yards passing, 3 of 16 on third down conversions. We know the Florida State defense is good. It's going to be good. What happens when they have to maybe carry a little bit more weight, though, We've seen it before. We saw it a lot with Florida the last couple of years, where the defense eventually gets tired of carrying the load for the team. But this is the first time out of Florida State, and they're now number 12 in the country because of the loss to Alabama and because they lost DeAndre Francois for the season. But this was a team that everybody's talking about being in the mix for the playoff. Because, I mean, and you lose one guy, you lose a lot on quarterback, but see what he can do against an NC State team, which he should be able to move a ball against, and see how the defense continues to react now that they are going to be the focal point of this team, because it is going to be on Florida State's success this year will be on the defense and how well the defense stays healthy and how well they play throughout the year. This is the first chance we get to see them since the Alabama game.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be, like you said, to me, if I'm Jimbo, I mean, this is a game where you have plenty of time to think about it, to look over the I don't think Blackman's going to come into this game being scared. I mean, I think he's had more than enough time to look at film, more than enough time to go on. I think there'll be the initial butterflies going out on the field, obviously. But you're right. I mean, I think if you're Jimbo Fisher, you want to simplify this offense a little bit. You want to get back to the running game. You want to get, Cam Akers out there. You want to establish him. You want to get Jacques Patrick. You want to establish them. If you establish that line of scrimmage, if you get the running game going, that's just going to make things a little bit easier on that quarterback. And then, you tell your defense, okay, hold them to, 10 points and let's see what we can do, because we think we can score that. So this is going to be a developmental game in some regards for the quarterback position. What you want to do is make sure you become – this isn't a game where I expect Blackman to come out and throw the ball for 400 yards and stuff like that. This is a game manager type situation. Don't lose the game for us, but just put us in situations where we can take over and win the game, because our defense is that good.
And a game you're going to Thursday night, and I'm bringing this up because I want to talk about a bigger topic, but Temple at number 21 USF, Thursday night, 7:30. USF dominated Illinois last week, set school records for yards against an FBS school, 680 total yards, Flowers, 386 total yards, 5 touchdowns. Yet, their ranking has gone down since the start of the season. San Diego State now has a win over Stanford, a ranked team. They have 2 wins over the Pac-12. They are now ranked 22, right behind USF. Memphis has a big win over UCLA. Certainly, they're going to be in the mix in the American, should they continue winning. Toledo could get into the discussion if they win this weekend at number 14, Miami. Certainly, it's a long shot, but Toledo is probably the best team in the MAC, and this could be a statement win for them. Going into this year, we looked at USF and we said, that's the best team returning in the group of five. They have the easiest schedule. They are not a lock, but they are our team to be in that New Year's Day Six Bowl. And they may still go undefeated and they still have a very favorable schedule. But then you start saying, well, because they don't have a signature win, and then you look at San Diego State moving up close to them, USF, they did not look good against San Jose State. They gave up some points to Illinois, but they looked dominant on offense, but it doesn't seem to be enough. Maybe that San Jose State game is lingering a little bit, just the way it started, and people are affecting their voting, but USF needs to keep winning, but they need to start doing it in style, and this is one of those national TV games that people will get a chance to see them. I still think they're the best group of five team, but I mean, I think this is a concern. And when you're talking about group of five, you want to be that team that gets into the big bowl game. They're going to have to be even better, I think, to hold off some of these other teams that are coming behind them.
Yeah, I think so. But I will argue the fact that I think because they play in the American, and as you mentioned, Memphis had their big win. I think they don't play Memphis, but I think this will help them in the long run. I mean, the thing that's great about San Diego State, they've got the 2 big wins against the Pac-12, but then they play in the Mountain West. And so they're going to eventually play some really bad teams that are going to, that's going to kind of detract a little bit from what they're able to do. I think really there is a little bit of a lag. I think this team offensively doesn't know what it is right now. I think Sterling Gilbert's trying. I think we saw Quentin Flowers was supposed to be more of a sit-back, drop-back passer. They talked about in the spring how he wasn't going to nearly run as much because they wanted him to really kind of control the offense. I don't think that worked. That's not what Quentin Flowers is as a quarterback. So I think they're starting to find out what he can do now that he's being able to run the football. They are dominating on the ground. That's the thing that I spoke with Charlie Strong on the American Athletic Conference call, did it this week, and he said, we have to establish a running game. If we get the running game going, we got three guys who had over 200 yards rushing. If we establish the running game, that's physicality. That helps the quarterback position. That helps everything else. They've got talented receivers. Their defense is still suspect at times, and they need to pick it up. But a win over a Temple team on a Thursday night game would be do a lot to help them out as well. But this was the problem going into the season. USF has a very, very weak schedule. So even if they had to go undefeated and hope that someone along the way trips up, and I think that could happen. Toledo could happen. That could happen. Obviously, Memphis could fall down the wayside. But again, I think being in the American helps them a little bit because the American is probably the best of the Group of Five conferences.
Last year, this game, Temple won 46-30. It was what propelled the Owls to the division championship and kept USF where USF was. So a little bit of revenge in that one also. But you'll be out at the game Thursday. Enjoy the game, Matt, and follow all his reporting on OrlandoSentinel.com. And that's it for our Welcome Back podcast. It seems like a season preview volume 2. There are games that have still been going on, but for the teams that we cover predominantly in the state and for our own lives, it's been just a little bit chaotic and just waiting for a little bit of normalcy to start coming back, which we'll do this week with week 4 of college football. And we'll talk to you after the weekend and look back at some of these games and see what we were right and what we were wrong about. Please subscribe, tell a friend, share on social media, do all those things. And we thank you for listening to the College Gridiron 365 podcast.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.